Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Unauthorized Disclosure Podcast. I'm Kevin Gastola, joined by Rania Kalik. Hey, Rania.
Hey, Kevin.
We're pleased to be joined by our friend, Katie Halper, the host of the Katie Halper Show for this week. She's a writer and contributor to Fair, The Nation, New York Magazine, and other outlets. Thanks for joining us, Katie.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, so the reason why we wanted to have you on this week is because we had the two back-to-back nights of Democratic presidential debates. I guess it was one debate spread out over two nights in Miami. And we were following it just as much as anybody else was. And I suppose to begin, I mean, let's start. We won't really try to take the first and second night individually. Let's just talk about it as one massive debate that took about 4 hours of time. And I don't know, like, what are your thoughts after watching? Let's just start for our listeners very, very general. I mean, there's so many places and directions we can go, but what are you thinking after these two nights?
I think one of the most interesting things about these debates is the fact that you had Andrew Yang's mic cut off. I don't know if you guys saw that.
I did not see that.
Yeah. So apparently his mic was cut off at certain points, and he couldn't even, speak, which is a great metaphor for our media. And Matt Taibbi actually tweeted, "Turning the mics off of certain candidates during the debate seems very 2019. 4 years from now, they will be kept in hold crates unless polling at least 2%. But because Andrew Yang said that he didn't get more airtime and his mic kept being off unless he was called on.
That's actually a good point. Why don't we talk about the format before we get too far in? I mean, how do both of you feel about the way these are done and structured? Because I think it's quite terrible the way they have 10 people squeezed into these 2 hours and they really don't have any time. And also, if you're a marginal candidate who gets time, you don't know that you're going to be called on again in the debate. So you just give stump speeches.
Yeah, It was a game show. It was a fucking show. It was like everybody was like,
it made me miss, I can't believe I'm saying this, it made me miss Hillary Clinton in 2016. But it made me miss having so few candidates. Now, I think it's great to have a lot of candidates, but it made me miss having more substantive debates. And, you know, Clinton, for all her stuff, like, she really is a nerd, which made it an interesting debate. I mean, when she wasn't smearing Sanders, which of course she would do, but you could, to her credit, I mean, it's funny. It's like you could see that she kind of would have rather spoken about policy, I think, than just smeared Sanders, as opposed to her husband. I'm sure, like, Bill was coaching her at home.
He's like, get on him. Get on him, Hill.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, come on, Hill. You can do this. Like, get back to no, it did kind of make me miss that. Of course, it made me miss just having more time from each candidate. And it's very frustrating, I mean, to see the candidate, poor Bernie, obviously, and it's no surprise, I'm a big Bernie guy, but watching his face while people would say things that he couldn't respond to. And of course, he's set up, because if Bernie interrupts anyone, especially a woman or a person of color or a gay person, he is smeared as the homophobe, misogynist, racist that he is not, but that that pundits claim he is. So he's really, he can't win either way. He either can't get in a word edgewise, and if he does, he's accused of silencing people. My favorite part is, I don't know if you saw this, there's some tweet going around. Someone tweeted that, like, Biden got the hand by Bernie or something, because there's footage of him. Sanders' hand got Biden. Some J. Molina Flynn Esquire guy tweeted that, and it went extremely viral. And you see Bernie hand go near Biden, and Biden has the fucking chutzpah to look at Bernie like and raise his eyebrows. I'm like, dude, this is about 17,000 leagues away from your body compared to how you get all handsy and palsy with women.
Right.
Maybe this gives you a hundredth percent of the feel. One a hundredth, percent of the feel that the women you grope get. and you can't handle having like a Jewy. It's anti-Semitic, right, Rania? We talked about it last time. It's a Jewy
100%.
Hand. The hands move. Our hands move, people.
Yeah.
But of course, the irony is that these same people are the ones who call Sanders a misogynist over his fingers, but his fingers are equal opportunity. And Rania and I talked about this on an episode of mine that we actually have a video of about how Bernie is a back patter and who does it to men. And then Rania said it's almost like a burping thing, like a burping a baby.
It is. You know, I have to say this whole debate, the structure made it such that like the front runners were all drowned out by what I would say were like anybody who could come up with like a really clever couple lines dominated a certain round. It really was like a game show. So like the first night of debates, Tulsi Gabbard had a moment where she like corrected some guy who's literally, I mean, there's so many candidates, half of them.
Tim Ryan.
Thank you. I don't trust people whose first names are the same as like a last name or whose last name is the same as the first name.
Right.
Like Rick Scott is like that. I just like, it's something about it like rubs me the wrong way. But
it's very waspy.
It's so waspy.
It's like Jim Bob.
Exactly. So, or like Rick Scott. Wait, I said Rick Scott before? Oh, yeah. God, I really hate him.
He's worth saying. So, like Beetlejuice. Rick Scott.
Scott, it could easily be Scott Rick. It just bothers me that you can change it around like that. But anyways, Tulsi Gabbard had a moment where she told Tim Ryan, where he was like saying the Taliban attacked America and 9/11. Right. She's like, no, Al-Qaeda did. And that sort of made her more popular.
Right.
And then the second, and like Elizabeth Warren really was drowned out, I think.
Yeah.
The second night,
did you hear, by the way, speaking of drowned out, let me let you finish.
Well, like what I was going to say is that the second night, like Bernie Sanders and Joe, well, Bernie Sanders was mostly drowned out because there was just too many people speaking.
Right.
And everybody, because of the format, became sort of a caricature of themselves because they could only say the few lines from their stump speeches. There was no substance. And then Kamala Harris, as much as I dislike her, she's really good at these sort of one-liners. It was like obnoxious. And then she totally tore Joe Biden a new asshole.
That was
with like that. Yeah, I like enjoyed really that. But then what I found quite frustrating is every time Mayor Pete speaks, like my insides like curl up. I don't know what it is about him. Everything he says just like, oh, stop talking. Like it's like nails on a fucking chalkboard. His demeanor.
Wow, Rania, I didn't know you were so homophobic.
I'm obviously a very big homophobe.
Yeah.
I'm obvious. It's the only explanation.
He looks like a chipmunk also.
I think he looks like Peter Pan.
Oh yeah, he does kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, do you know that he wrote his 2000 winning essay? He wrote a 2000 winning essay for the Profiling Courage essay. And it was about Bernie Sanders. This was when he was at St. Joseph High School. Yeah, he won an essay about...
Learned that from Nathan Robinson's piece.
Oh, yeah.
Current
Affairs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But continue, so
He praises Sanders. It's so funny.
And now he's like... And the other thing that I found really interesting, though, about the debates is, like, you really could see just how far... Not far left, but how much more to the left... Or how much towards the left Bernie Sanders has moved the conversation in the Democratic Party to the point where, like, it's like the people who don't support Medicare for All were in the minority. Hickenlooper, by the way, just is never going to win based on his name. Like, no one's going to ever elect a president Hickenlooper.
Well, Buttigieg, it's unfair because he seems folksier than he is because no one can say his name, so they call him Mayor Pete.
He talks like a folksy guy, too. He's like, hey, folks.
Yeah.
But Hickenlooper is like just... Him, everything he said was just, it was like, he was like the Republican in the room, but he was in the minority and that used to be the center of the Democratic Party.
Right.
So that was kind of interesting. But
he and Delaney were the best Republican candidates on stage.
They were. Rania, you know that they call him Frackenlooper, the environmentalist?
Oh, yeah, Frackenlooper, yeah. But Delaney was also awful. I mean, he was like, you know, big entrepreneur guy. I really didn't want to hear from him.
Well, there was that guy Swalwell who every time he talked, first of all, his face doesn't move. Is that like mean of me to say? His face,
no, it's kind of like the Jim Webb phenomenon where you expect him to pull off a mask at the end. I expected to be Joe Biden under there for some reason.
But I didn't like what he was saying about passing the torch. because I'm just like, you being young doesn't mean you're not an asshole.
Right.
Also, doesn't mean you're not an asshole.
He was like, I want to break up with Russia and get back together with
Nico. It reminded me of one of those like dating game shows.
Yeah,
where
it was.
You're like, my name's Steve and I'm a surfer and I like having a good time. That's what it sounded like.
He tried that line like twice too, by the way, the whole passing the torch. Because it apparently didn't get what he wanted the first time.
Right.
And he's also a huge Russia gator. Just like
all of them. Yeah. All of them.
Well, no, but Swalwell has made a living going on CNN these last three years.
It's a great gig. Make a living. You know, I have to say, one of the things I like about Hickenlooper is how he's almost like a self-parody. He said at that, you know, that event at the California Dems event that, you know, where they're talking about
socialism.
He said, if we wanted to defeat Donald Trump and achieve big progressive goals, socialism is not the answer. We shouldn't try to achieve universal coverage by removing private insurance from 150 million Americans. This is my favorite part, though. We should not try to tackle climate change by guaranteeing every American a government job. I mean, really? We don't want to guarantee that? It doesn't sound so bad to me.
It doesn't. Well, you know what else? No, he's awful. And he was like the anti-socialist of the evening. Yeah. And I think he receives like a ton of funding from health insurance companies, if I'm not mistaken.
What do you say?
If I'm not mistaken. But the other thing, what I do want to say is I thought it was so funny. Like, it kind of made all of it worth watching when they were asking everybody to say, what would you do if you were president? What's the one thing, the first thing you would do in office and that you would focus on, that you would try to get done? And Joe Biden was like defeating Donald Trump.
Right.
It's like, it's all he's got.
That's so
even
funny.
Even if he's elected.
Right. Like, once he's president, that's still going to be the focus?
Yeah.
That is kind of a great metaphor, because what else did he have? He was also great when he was like, and that's my time. Like, no one does that unless they don't want to talk anymore.
Well, he had a reason not to. He got called the fuck out. Like, real good.
I got to say, Kamala Harris and Castro were my favorite from each night, just in terms, because I think they just were bulldogs in a good way, and they each had a target that they like teared into, and for pit bulls more than bulldogs, I guess, but or both pit bulls.
Well, Beto O'Rourke was totally insufferable.
That's a thing. But Castro really called him out.
Yeah, like, he
looked like such an idiot, and Beto's used to just getting away with these platitudes, but he wasn't in this case. And Castro was like, you need to do your homework. And then, this was amazing. There was actually a part where Castro, Beto literally couldn't handle it. And he turned his back. He, like, couldn't look at Castro. And I don't know why people haven't talked about this more. I did put up a little video of it. But he literally has to turn away from him.
That's awesome.
He looks like a kid about to throw a tantrum.
Well, Beto, everything that he said that came out of his mouth sounded like he was like doing a part of like a This American Life episode or something.
Yeah.
Or that he had memorized some kind of creative writing or like a poem or something.
Yeah.
That he wanted.
It sounded like he had filled out JFK speeches. He had done them in Mad Libs. He had like Mad Lib JFK speeches.
And it was random. Like, if you followed his answers, there were like parts that just went in all directions. Like, they weren't one continuous thought.
He's Sarah Palin. He's Sarah Palin. Like, he would respond. I don't know if you guys remember this. Sarah Palin would just respond to answers to questions with unrelated answers. And he did that. He's just smarter. But he basically was doing that. Which is why I really do think he was reading from a Mad Libs he had done or something.
All right. So let me ask both of you about Chuck Todd during this entire thing. And like, he's such a punchline, but the fact that we had to ask what to me seemed like game night questions for the people, like, I kept waiting for them to ask something like, all right, you have a lifeboat. You can only take one item from the ship. What do you take? Give me a one word answer. Like, these questions were just comical. I actually was very pleased that none of the candidates gave him one word answers so that I could see that he was like grinding his teeth and wanted to like pull the hair out of his skull.
Chuck Todd, it's worth remembering that he said to Bernie Sanders, said that Bernie Sanders got worked up about the Central America stuff. You guys remember that ridiculous interview, you know, Bernie Sanders being in Nicaragua.
Yeah.
And Chuck Todd said to Bernie Sanders after that, if you're the nominee, the right is going to basically hammer and sickle you to death. This was on Meet the Press. And Bernie Sanders.
When was this?
This was after, okay, and I actually have a piece coming out, depending on when you release this, it'll already be out at fair.org, on Sydney Ember and her relentless crusade against Bernie Sanders. And by the way, Ember, her father-in-law was the CEO of Bain Capital, and she's an analyst at BlackRock, which is the biggest investor in coal, and her husband's a hedge fund manager and used to work at Bain also. But when she wrote that hit piece, one of her many hit pieces, on Bernie Sanders, this was the one where she, unconscionably whitewashed the Contras. I mean, it was absolute, like, I still can't get over it. But when she wrote that hit piece about him in the 1980s, you know, daring to side against death squads. Afterwards, Chuck Todd, so Jonathan Chait, of course, you know, criticized Bernie for siding with the Sandinistas. Chuck Todd, of course, said to him that he was going to get hammer and sickle by the right because of his politics. And then Bernie rightfully said, I understand the right wing doing it. I know they will, but I don't want the media doing it. Which is true. I mean, the media is basically just a megaphone for the right. They pretend to be liberal, but they just red bait, and they actually are doing everything they can to get push out the one candidate who I actually think could. I obviously like Bernie more than anyone else. I think he's also the most electable.
I agree.
Against Trump. Yeah.
I agree. And, you know, I will say about the media's bias, it was really apparent with the questions they were throwing at Sanders.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, they would always ask, Sanders would give an answer, whether it was about Medicare for all and if he's going to raise taxes on the middle class, or even when it was, like, they asked him a crazy question about reproductive rights.
Right.
And then they followed up with, well, you didn't answer the question. They didn't do that with Biden.
No, they didn't.
They didn't do that with Harris.
They didn't follow up or push back.
With anyone. No. Yeah, yeah.
They also keep asking him that question about, like, what do you think of the fact that you're not a woman or a black person or a Latino or a young.
Like, what the fuck is he supposed to say about that?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm sorry I'm not Latino.
I'm really so tired. I have to write a piece about this. I'm over straight white men saying that they're over straight white men presidents and candidates. Like, what kind of privileged world do you live in where policy doesn't matter? Like, what kind of utopian world where we have no problems about, like, do you want the white guy who's going to actually put out policies that help disproportionately help people of color and women? Like, forget actually caring, looking at things through an intersectional lens and a class, which includes a class, right? Like, if you care about disenfranchised, marginalized populations, and we know these people don't care about Palestinians or Arabs, so let's put that question aside.
Well, we're not, to be fair, like, we're not marginalized. We're just, like, really, really, really bad. And so we need to be, like, civilized.
Yeah, exactly. You're yeah, they need to civilize you guys. Then they can care about your lives.
For sure.
Or your humanity once you guys turn into people.
But
you need to be controlled by the 65 country coalition that Joe Biden's gonna build.
Yeah. Oh my god. But, like, you know what, it's just disgusting. I'm really tired of it. And, like, you know, I always go back to the example of the fight for 15, and if you don't get that that was an issue that helped women and people of color, and you think he wasn't an anti-racist or wasn't a feminist, but you didn't support that, then you have absolutely no right to be talking.
Like, if you don't think that his position on ending the, like, genocide in Yemen is great.
Right, of course. Well, I mean, yes, and it's such a low bar because I'm actually saying, like, we know that these people don't care about people outside of the country.
Right.
We know that they don't care about, like, Muslim Americans or Arabs or Arab Americans. But even just their, like, based on their own liberal nationalism,
right,
which just claims to center people of color and women and LGBTQ people within these borders, just based on that in itself, like, you should like Bernie's policies.
Right.
Representation is important when we have all things being equal, when we have identical politicians. Yes, I agree. When we don't, though, I care a lot more about how policy, like the lives of millions of people will be affected. I care about that more than the identity of one person who's the most powerful person in the world. And one other thing, I would love to go back and look at that Rachel Maddow question. But one other thing is that Chuck Todd, it was like he might as well have been like putting policies in air quotes or like patting Warren on the head when he kept talking about, like, you have policies for everything, I know. It was just so condescending.
No, it was. It really, really was. I don't dislike Warren, but I like Sanders so much more. And I really feel like Warren is taking votes away from him, and that bothers me. But, like, yeah, the way she was spoken to was so obnoxious. And also Chuck Todd at one point last night in the second debate was, like, he was, like, rooting on. He was, like, telling Kamala Harris that she didn't have any more time left. But then he was, like, I'm with you. And it's, you don't say that ever, like, literally ever to anyone who's, like, slightly left.
Right. Yeah. No, he's awful. Absolutely awful.
And, also, do you remember when Trump called him droopy eyes?
Oh, my everybody God.
Everyone was like, that's anti-Semitic. And I was like, is it, though? And also, I didn't know Chuck Todd was Jewish.
That's funny.
I had no idea. Maybe he's not Jewish and they're still saying it's anti-Semitic. I don't know.
I love it because but what's not anti-Semitic is things about
Bernie Sanders.
Bernie holding three houses and standing in front of a money tree.
Calling him cheap.
Yeah, cheap but rich. That is so disgusting.
Cheap Bernie.
So
why don't we focus on Joe Biden just because he had such a horrible debate.
Done, by the way. Joe Biden had his eyes done.
So obvious. At least his Botox wasn't out of control. Do you remember like 20? Do you remember 2012?
Are we going to be able to talk about Marianne Williamson and also de Blasio?
Sure. Yeah. Marianne Williamson, I apparently met her and I forgot.
Oh, really?
But she was pretty.
How could you forget meeting someone like her?
Because I suck.
Did she leave your energy?
No, but she was, I don't remember. Someone told me I met her and I'm like, oh. But and it sounds right, but I don't remember hitting her. But I liked most of what she said, except at the end, she was so funny. She was like a preacher
girlfriend.
About Biden though, what I want to say is I really think Biden, whenever he speaks, destroys himself.
Oh yeah, he's his own worst enemy.
He really is. Like, and I mean, Kamala Harris tore him. Bernie kind of, he could have done better tearing him money rock, but he kind of tore money rock. And also like, Joe Biden had nothing inspirational or interesting to say. And he was also put in this position where, for example, like when it came to, I was surprised they asked him this, but about deportations under Obama and like Obama's policy. And then Joe Biden was put in the position where he had to defend Obama's policy on immigration, which was an atrocious policy. And then he was also put in a situation where like he has to defend the status quo on like Obamacare. And it just like nothing he said, if I was going to go for Biden, because I don't know what reason, like Biden didn't win himself any votes. If anything, he lost them to other people. And on top of that, he didn't look like he was into it. Like it's like he's just doing it because the party wants him to.
Yeah.
Well, so to the thing
to
the thing about busing with Kamala Harris, which was such a big deal, I just wanted to make sure I worked in this from Jonathan Kozol at The Nation, because he wrote a piece in early June about Joe Biden collaborating with segregationists.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is actually a press release that The Nation sent out, but I actually think it's good, a good press release to read from. So he said last night, Joe Biden said, "I did not oppose busing." And Kozol said, "Biden should not be allowed to get away with this bald-faced lie."
Yeah.
As I noted in The Nation, Biden flatly said, "I oppose busing," in an interview with a Delaware paper in 1975. He continued, "It's an asinine concept, the utility of which has never been proven to me. I've gotten to the point where I think our only recourse to eliminate busing may be a constitutional amendment." In the U.S. Senate, Biden didn't merely give support to Southern segregationists. He introduced legislation of his own to prohibit busing for school integration. All of this is in the public record. It's a shameful record for a potential Democratic nominee. Despite his recent effort to allay concerns about that record, it cannot be expunged or easily forgiven. And by the way, his argument that he was making on stage, as others have noted, was that
the local government should be able to make its own decisions. It's a states' rights argument about how they should be able
to. It's a conservative argument.
Yeah, segregationists make that argument. And people make that argument. Yeah.
He really, I mean, he really,
you
like,
know, well, the
he
best was like, part, guys, I did. He denied it.
Yeah. I mean, for, the best part is that I actually interviewed Branko Marcevic.
From Jacobin. Jacobin.
And I found clips, and it was a Patreon only, but I released it because I thought it was so important. I found clips of him, of Biden, saying that he was anti-busing because it was like assimilationist, and it was a rejection of Black is beautiful, and Black,
what?
Yeah, and Black pride. Yeah, I mean, I have to play it again. I have to make a video of it because apparently, I think like no one listens to podcasts, and we got to do videos. Sorry to.
I know, but people do listen, but they definitely like you reach a different audience with video for sure.
Right.
But I really think that Biden, like, I can't imagine him, because I worry he's gonna be the nominee, and I really can't imagine him doing a good job against Trump. Like, he can barely do a good job against his own party in a primary. I just can't see it happening. I really think it's like a disaster that he could possibly be the front runner, or that he is the front runner. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. And you know what? The media would rather, I had Carl Bayer on actually talk about this. People would rather, I think, I think people would rather that someone who can lose, some people would rather Bernie lose the primary, even if that means the Dems losing the general.
Yes.
But why?
Because
those people. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The corporate type people.
Yeah.
No, they hate Bernie. I mean, Bernie Sanders, they are more in line. They won't admit it, but they're more in line with Trump than they are with Sanders. That's why.
Yeah, they would rather have Bernie lose and Donald Trump win. Yeah.
Yes.
If that's the way it has to be, if Bernie's nominated, they would be okay if Donald Trump ended up defeating him too.
Probably,
right. They would rather that than someone else winning and losing.
Yeah.
So there's another moment I want to bring up here, and it came from someone who's totally forgettable. Although I think he's still in the Senate, but Michael Bennett did have a really good moment with Biden. I don't know if you caught it or know of it, mm-hmm. but it's worth sharing where Biden was celebrating his bipartisanship and how he had gotten votes to pass the Recovery Act, this $800 billion Recovery Act. And this is what he said. It got three votes changed. We needed to be able to keep the government from shutting down and going bankrupt. I got Mitch McConnell to raise taxes, $600 billion, by raising the top rate. And he goes on and he talks about what he did. And then Michael Bennett stopped and he got 30 seconds from Chuck Todd, because you have to steal your time during this format. And he got 30 seconds to say, sometimes you do have to beat them, but the deal that he talked about with Mitch McConnell was a complete victory for the Tea Party. It extended the Bush tax cuts permanently. The Democratic Party had been running against that for 10 years. We lost the economic argument because the deal extended almost all those Bush tax cuts permanently and put in place the mindless cuts that we still are dealing with today that are called the sequester. That was a great deal for Mitch McConnell. It was a terrible deal for America.
Right. Yeah, no, that was a really good moment, actually. And I was like, oh, who's that guy? It made me actually wonder who he was.
But don't look too closely. He's not really worth anything. He's not much different from Hickenlooper.
No, he was bad on Bernie.
But I was just like, oh, what's his name again? Like, that's the one thing that made me.
He was so smug about it. But I got to say that his father was the president of of the university I went to, Wesleyan.
Oh,
no. I mean, no.
So he's really from of the people.
Yeah,
his father was the university president.
Yeah. Was he saying he was Jewish, half Jewish?
He kept bringing that up. He was like, my ancestors were killed or something.
Guy I've ever seen.
Yeah, he looked really waspy. I was surprised. Yeah. I was like, Bennett, your name's Bennett. Are you really Jewish? I don't know. I don't believe it.
Gotta find out. Gotta get ancestry 1, 2, 3.
There was one thing, by the way, that I noticed. Sorry to keep jumping around, but when Joe Biden and Kamala Harris were going at it, Joe Biden had one pretty good comment or comeback to Kamala Harris that, like, I only noticed the second time I saw the clip.
Yeah.
because she destroyed him so much.
Right.
But he was like, you know, I became a public defender instead of a prosecutor.
Yeah, that was great.
I was like, oh, shit. Oh, shit, he punched back.
But yeah, it's hilarious to me to hear that, because he's not really trying to alienate prosecutors and get them to not support his campaign.
No, it's like, just that he's like, just pulling. You know what that is, actually? That is, and this is why Nathan Robinson said this to me on a podcast. This is why Bernie's the best against Trump, one of the reasons. Because what Biden did there was he called out her hypocrisy, right? Now, he's obviously right in going after him on the busing stuff. But what Biden did there was he, because unlike Bernie, these people have all been, are all hypocrites. Because Bernie, for better or for worse, has been saying the same thing. Obviously, we think it's better. For worse, has been saying the same thing since the 70s, right? So Trump won't be able to do that to him the way he'll be able to do that to everyone else. And we saw he did that with Hillary Clinton on super predators. Obviously, Trump is a raging racist. He decided not to go after Black people as much in this election, but we all know, you know, he wanted to make the, bring back the death penalty after the Central Park Five. But he is really good at that, and so he'll do that with Kamala Harris.
What's your, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It wasn't about the content; it was about the hypocrisy. There's a really good tweet. I just want to call it out, highlight it. It's by the New Thinker, whose handle is The New Thinker with two R's at the end. And he goes, Kamala Harris, : Biden, you're a racist ass, love segregationists. Joe Biden, your ass was a prosecutor locking up Black people. Me. And then he has a gif of a Black dude eating popcorn. Leaning back in the
Well, I want to ask you what your favorite think piece was on Biden being a sexist to Kamala Harris, because I know there's like a dozen out there right now, right? I mean, because if Sanders had done the same thing, they would be all over the website, everywhere, all over this Twitter.
Have we seen any about him?
I haven't.
About Biden?
No, nothing. Nothing ascribing what he did to misogyny or anything like that.
Or racism.
Even though his voice got louder and louder as she challenged him.
I know. Imagine if we should write pieces about Biden the way that they would about Sanders. I mean, same thing. You know, this Jessica McClintock, who used to be at Emily's List and now has a podcast with Zerlina, truth-telling Zerlina Maxwell. I heard what's called. It's a serious radio show. But she actually, you saw that Mayor Pete said, this is amazing. Everyone's so, they're felling over the fact that Mayor Pete, his answer to why he didn't do anything about basically police brutality, you know, because he didn't do anything.
He said he's like the mayor and he can't take sides or something. I was like, what kind of answer is that? He was talking specifically, there is some truth to the fact that during an ongoing investigation, they're not supposed to like comment publicly not that the cop's ever going to get charged, but but the fact that he like couldn't actually say like anything about the overall issue that wasn't like appealing to all sides was really obnoxious.
Right. I know. And everyone's praising him for saying, I couldn't get it done, as a very, like Jess McIntosh says, I couldn't get it done is a very honest way for Pete Buttigieg to start this very difficult answer.
God, like, I hate how
really?
Much people like
is that,
him.
That part, I mean, it sounds like a dodge.
Totally.
He dressed it. And what's interesting is all these articles about him are saying that, but they don't quote the part that you said where he said he couldn't take sides.
Yeah, it's really frustrating to react.
Like you said, he made it very individualist. Like, you know, he can't bring this person back. It won't help, you know, he still has to look the mother in the eyes. It wasn't a structural thing.
And the cop says he has a knife, but then the police lapel cam was turned off, so we'll just never know.
Also, like, saying the FOP is upset at you is never a thing to, like, actually prove that you're doing good on police
accountability. Because they're pretty much, if you're a Democrat, yeah, they're exactly. upset with you. That's pretty much how it works with the FOP.
Yeah, exactly. That's the what does that stand for? It's the police.
It's the Fraternal Order Federation. It sounds fascist.
Like here in Chicago, that would mean nothing because, like, if what they want to do is be able to just pick people up off the streets and drive them around in circles and torture them and get away with it.
Right. And if you don't do that, you're anti-cop. I also really like Biden. He was like a monkey. I felt like he was like de Blasio. I felt like he was a monkey on a what's it called? What does Tarzan have?
Monkey on a what? A tree?
A vine? What is it?
A vine. I don't know. Oh, that thing he swings. A vine. Yeah.
A vine. Like, I felt like he had this feel of just coming in on a vine, swinging in at certain points and saying really woke things and then swinging back off. And then, like, just trying, being like, you know, speaking up for the disenfranchised. And then at the end, he goes with Russia as the biggest threat, which was really weird.
Yeah,
He quoted Che.
Yeah, de Blasio got in trouble for this.
You know, I didn't know he quoted Che. I didn't see the whole first debate. I only saw the highlights.
By the way, do you know his wife was part of the Combahee River Collective?
I didn't know.
Oh, really? What the hell happened to them?
And, you know, she's a which was a radical lesbian collective that started the term identity politics, but to mean basically the opposite.
Something very different.
It's used today. Yeah. I mean, it really is about intersectionality, not the way it's used today, which is kind of divide and conquer.
Right.
Assad Haider has a great book about that called Mistaken Identities. But
for a second, when I thought you said Assad Haider, like I hate, like I was like, yeah. Oh, there's somebody who goes by that like Twitter.
That's really funny, yeah.
But Assad Haider,
I think it's like everyone who harasses you on a,
Well, one thing that I noticed that really bothered me is the Democratic Party. This goes to a broader issue. There was not a lot of foreign policy discussed, but the Democratic Party is doing this thing where they're being really hawkish on foreign policy to the point of, like, when people ask about China, they're like, well, Trump is right to go after China. He's just doing it wrong.
Challenge.
And then all of these, it's a China challenge. And then everyone's like, China's stealing American ideas. China's stealing from us. China, and it's such a fucking cop-out to just be like, it's all China's fault that jobs are shipped overseas. It's like, really? Really? Yeah. It's not any of those, like, corporate-friendly trade deals that, like, that literally, like, corporations lobbied for so they could ship their labor overseas. You're really going to blame China?
It's so xenophobic.
It's so, like, yellow peril. And it was so disgusting at the second debate, because it was the first debate they talked about China a little bit, but the second debate, everybody had to go around. Like, it was, like, the level of, it's just, like, you don't sound different from Republicans. You sound like fucking Trump.
Yeah.
Like, Trump literally campaigned in 2016 on China is raping our country. He said that. He said China is raping our country.
It's better than, so at least it's not just Mexicans.
No, it's not just Mexicans. But in this case, what's also funny is, like, with China, they're like, the big talking point is they're stealing our ideas. Like, the Chinese are just a bunch of fucking thieves. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, do you know how fucked up that sounds?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Like, it sounds, I'm like, maybe stop defunding education.
Right.
Like, if you want to compete with the Chinese, instead of blaming them for stealing American ideas, whatever the fuck that means, like stop defunding education. But everyone across the board except for Sanders. Sanders is really, like, I gotta say, he is the him and Tulsi Gabbard and Elizabeth Warren, are the only ones who really stick to what their substance is about.
Yeah.
And everybody else was just, like, really all about the cute one-liners to get them
sound
a viral
bites,
video.
Yeah, sound bites.
Yeah. Yeah.
The line, by the way, that de Blasio said was hasta la victoria siempre, which is a Che line. And it is funny. He said it in Miami.
Which, by the way, it's not a joke down there to get caught doing that. Because when I was doing some research before the debate on, I had a theory. It didn't really pan out about why the DNC wanted to have it in Miami because of the right-wing politics of these Latin American populations. And they thought they could box in Bernie. But, which was really strange to me, Venezuela didn't come up at all during either of the debates. But, you know, two other examples that go with what happened to de Blasio is that I found out that these are both horrible Florida Democrats. They're corporate Democrats. But Debbie Mercarsel Powell from Ecuador, she got in trouble when she showed up in a photo with Danny Glover. And
because got her in trouble?
Yeah, because Danny Glover supports Castro and Chavez and has been friendly toward Maduro.
Right, but, like, just hanging out with an actor.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
but that's how, like,
movies.
Virulent and awful it is down there in the tip of the peninsula. And also, like, Shalala, Donna Shalala, who is this, like, healthcare
investor, or she was served on the board of United Healthcare, and now she's a Democrat. And you know, right. She's fighting against Medicare for All and all that. Anyways, she had a campaign event in 2018 where Barbara Lee was present and got in trouble for it. And you won't even know why.
What?
I'll tell you why. It's because Fidel Castro died. And when he died, Barbara Lee said we should mourn him.
Oh my God.
How dare she?
So it's just, the right wing politics of Miami is incredible. It's off the charts. Like,
It's disgusting. It's really disgusting. All the rich Latin American kids who like still have homes in like Venezuela,
right,
or in other Latin American countries that have like become just like peace, like shitholes because the U.S. destroyed them. Right. They all have homes in Miami, and they go back and forth, and they still have their gated. They have their gated communities. Like, I have a friend who grew up in Venezuela in that community.
They did,
and he went. Well, go ahead.
Well, they did polling, by the way, to go along with what you're saying, and found that the Cuban American populations and some of these other groups are actually against people from these destitute countries coming to immigrate.
Of course they are, because they're a bunch of European. Like, we always forget with Latin America, it's a lot totally off topic. We always forget with Latin America, not everybody there is brown, like, black.
Right.
There's like a European elite class of like European ancestry that are white. They just speak Spanish.
Right.
Or they're like mixed and they look white. Like, it reminds me of when I was outside the Venezuelan embassy in D.C., and there was, like, a right-wing Venezuelan mob that were all whiter than me. Like, they were all white people who spoke Spanish.
Right.
And they want their shit back. They still have a lot of shit, by the way. They still have homes in Venezuela and homes in D.C. and work for ExxonMobil and Raytheon. But, yeah, like, we forget that about Venezuela. Just because, like, they speak Spanish doesn't mean they're brown.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And so they're racism.
Yeah, they call, I mean, you talked about this, Bronnie, because you did a lot of reporting about Venezuela, right? But they called Chavez a monkey.
Yeah.
I think they called,
Maduro? I believe so, yeah. But they like, what's interesting though is Juan Guaido isn't white looking.
Right,
so
he's
like,
not, yeah.
But they like what he stands for. So it's like they're sort of becoming like, you know, like smart about the identity politics as well. It's just like they're, you know, the neoliberal.
Right. But they're racist. And they lit a black guy on fire.
Several. They lit a lot more than one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it happened several times where they would just see a black person and be like, you're a Chavista. And they just assume if you're black, like you're a poor Chavista.
Right, but I didn't know that they lit more than one person on fire.
They've done it. Yeah, they have. And they've lit more than one person on fire. It's happened more than once. And they've also beat people up. They don't just light them on fire. And they also firebomb like childcare centers. Like, it's like, that's not what you do when you're trying to be more like equal and
freedom
democratic.
People,
you don't bomb like medical facilities and childcare centers. But anyway, the point is, those people in Miami suck.
Did you think they went out of their way to steer clear of like the Latin America issue? Because there were a couple times, like, Marianne Williamson said something, and I think...
Yeah, I was like, okay, lady, really, you're going to say that with Bernie Sanders standing on stage with you?
Well, I was actually like, Bernie Sanders mentioned something about Honduras being really violent. And I'm like, dude, Bernie, go a step further and be like, hey, we overthrew their... We helped overthrow their government. Like, maybe let's not do that.
Yeah.
Because that's what would happen. Like, that would have been a great...
The guy just put out a statement, like, a couple weeks ago saying that Lula needed to be free.
You know, no, but like, it's the thing about what I noticed, I honestly think with foreign policy, I think that they saw it as there's so many candidates on stage and Americans don't care about foreign policy.
Yeah.
Because they didn't even talk about Iran. Like, the Trump administration has almost started a war with Iran in like two and a half weeks.
Did you see our beloved Cory Booker, who was the only person who said that he wouldn't reinstall the Iran deal?
Whoa, I did not see that. Are you kidding me?
He took Trump's position.
Holy shit.
Because he's an APAC guy.
Wow.
Yeah, he said he can negotiate a better deal if he's president.
So, that is the Trump position.
Like a Trump line.
That sounds exactly like a Trump line. Wow.
Yeah.
Man, it's like a furnace here.
I mean, he said, look, I'm not going to say I support this deal if right now I think we could get more off the table from Iran.
Right, I'm sure that's why. Yeah.
Well, Cory Booker, you know, at least you know he's loyal to who fucks.
Oh my God, his Spanish.
Because I gotta say, nobody else sounds so loyal. Like all the corporate family can't. No, to, yeah. Well, not just to APAC, also to the healthcare industry. Like you gotta imagine if you're a private insurance executive, you must have been watching that debate like fuming. Like I've given you money, I've given you money, I've given you money, and that's why you're gonna talk about us.
Exactly. Like, yeah. After all we've been through, after all I've done for you.
Exactly. So like you gotta, you know.
Can I share something that I thought was like. I'm not going to say who this was, and she's not, but I just feel like this captures a major problem on the left, and I don't know what it is, but I tweeted something out about Bernie Sanders supporting Lula. I wrote, I just shared something that Bernie Sanders calls for the release of Brazil's ex-president Lula. And someone wrote, a woman who considers herself a feminist wrote, ask for women's and POCs and immigrants' rights, represent us. Which goes back to what you said.
What does that mean? Wait, I'm confused. In what context?
The context is, my brain just went in this direction when you were talking about Latin America and we were talking about how people don't care about foreign policy. I just thought this was an amazing moment where a woman who's actually very smart and an academic and a feminist, that was her response to Bernie calling up for the release of Brazil's ex-president Lula. It was, ask for women's and POCs and immigrants' rights, represent us.
What the hell? Like, why would that be a response?
It's such a great, it's like captures so much that's wrong with the left, who's lost its, has had its brain broken by Trump and also by Bernie. I think because they have such a strong emotional tie to Hillary Clinton that it gets in the way of their politics. But can you imagine, like, you're that, what kind of world view do you have when you are like,
a liberal one?
Yeah, I guess
left.
So.
I wouldn't call that left at all.
I know,
like,
you're
that,
right. I think they probably identify as left. But it's just like this really terrible, scary thing we're seeing among feminists. I got to say, among certain feminists, like divide and conquer, not seeing internationalism as part of feminism, a feminism that like ends order.
But have people ever, like, I mean, I don't know, like, the people I'm thinking of who are like that that I know have never been internationalists about anything unless it's, like, in a really...
I feel like some of them were. I mean, maybe I think there are two classes of people. I think there's some that never were. And then I think there really are some who's, like, you know how sometimes, you know, the PEP, progressive, except on Palestine?
Yeah,
and they have, like, good politics on this and then, like, on everything else. And then that stuff gets in the way because they have a personal investment or they think they do.
Yeah.
I feel like that's almost like this with Hillary Clinton. And
or if without Hillary Clinton now, there's I know what you mean. There's these people who should be on the left, but instead they're excited about candidates because they're women. So they're excited about Kirsten Gillibrand. Because she's a woman. They're excited about Kamala Harris because she's a woman.
Well, and they also hate Bernie because they think some people are triggered by him and they need to deal with that shit instead of taking it out on the world and depriving other people of justice. Like,
I don't get why they're triggered, but I really don't get why they're triggered.
You know what? I actually think it's because he's so relatable and he reminds people of people they know and maybe like didn't like in the 60s. Not because of anything he's done, but I think that may be it. Whereas everyone else is like they're like such fake varnished people. And they have issues with men. Like this will get me into a lot of trouble.
I think that's a big thing too. Yeah. And the fact that there's women running finally who could maybe be president, they care more about the identity. They're really overtaken by the identity aspect of it.
And of course, it's by powerful women who you're willing to throw all these other women under the bus, but because of how you identify with someone's journey.
People get, I mean, it's like, it always amazes me how excited people do get about, oh my God, a vagina in the White House. And I'm like, okay, calm down, because she's a bad vagina.
That's like, yeah, I know.
It's a bad vagina. There's good vaginas and bad vagina. They're not all good. Like, and she's a bad one. Like,
right. Well, I said you should vote with your vagina, but your vagina should have good policy.
Yeah, exactly. But on that note, I think, unless anybody else, is there anything else that we want to cover?
Well, so there was one more thing I wanted to get in
more
here.
This
will be my last thing, and then you both can have final comments, because we are at 50 minutes here, and I think want to wrap. But I wanted to make sure I noted that Joe Biden claimed that he ended the Iraq War, and that's just fucking not true.
George, the thing that happened was there was a status of forces agreement, and actually George W. Bush had already negotiated it with Iraq. We were going to withdraw all of our troops by 2011 as of 2008, and he didn't really do anything more to get those troops out of Iraq. In fact, Obama in 2011 was considering leaving forces in Iraq. So I don't know what Joe Biden was doing. Was he challenging that? Was he trying to get those troops to not be left in Iraq? But if you remember at all, I don't know. But there was a WikiLeaks cable that came out that covered a U.S. military raid that ended up in war crimes where people were executed. This happened in 2006 where they the U.S. forces had gone to this home. And they went inside and they handcuffed everyone, took them outside and shot them all in the head. These were women and children. And then their bodies, you know, were on Iraqi TV. It was a big event for at that moment in this community or village or whatever you want to call it. And the U.S. did nothing about it. And the Iraq government, when they read this cable and we're looking at it, they were saying to the Obama administration and military officials, we're not going to grant you immunity from war crimes prosecutions. The U.S. soldiers, we want them to go on trial in our courts if they commit crimes. And that was a deal breaker. And so that forced Barack Obama to withdraw all the troops and not leave a residual force. So that's actually why we fully ended and had a complete withdrawal from Iraq. Joe Biden didn't have anything to do with that. He didn't do shit to make sure that we didn't leave residual forces in Iraq.
Right. Well, yeah.
Dude, that's a really good point you brought up. He also was part of administration that everyone says Obama is responsible for ISIS because he withdrew troops. That's not why ISIS happened. ISIS happened because of Obama administration's policy on Syria. And Joe Biden was a part of that and essentially admitted as much at one point. So no one's smart enough to bring that up because no one cares or knows. For him to say that's a really good point you brought up. I actually didn't really even catch that because by the end I was just so done. I remember hearing that, but I didn't think about it.
Well, it was toward the end. It was the one time that Bernie felt like he should try to distinguish himself from Joe, but it was also after Kamala had totally disemboweled him. So he really didn't have to do any work at that point.
All right. Right, but Bernie needs to jump in more, and he needs to do it when straight white men, sadly, are talking.
Yeah, he didn't do a very good job of that. He really did. But it was a tough situation.
I know.
At the end of the day, I really don't think this debate will have changed
much. No, it's
much.
Not. It's sound bites, yeah.
Yeah, it's sound bites and something for the media to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
All right, well, it was good to have you on, Katie.
Let me just say, can I give one plug that... I'm going to be part of a Left Forum panel. And Rania, Left Forum is where we met. It's 3:00 on this Saturday. So it's June 29th at 3:00 at the Left Forum. It's called, what is it called? And Aaron Mate and Jordan Chard and I are going to be on it. It's called Combating the Corporate Media.
That sounds like an awesome panel. I wish I could be there.
Yeah, good objective. Good objective.
Yeah.
Well, everybody who's listening, if you're in New York City, that's where this is taking place. Yes.
Yeah.
You should totally go to this panel. It sounds like it's going to be awesome. I love Jordan. I love Aaron and I love Katie.
For those listening after that panel happens, we will share your piece when it goes up. So we'll look for it.
Fair piece. Yeah. And, Katie Halper Show, patreon.com/TheKatieHalperShow. It's on SoundCloud and iTunes. And I'm KT Halps on Twitter, which is letter K, letter T, H-A-L-P-S.
Woo! Thank you so much for coming on, Katie. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
We hope to have you back on soon.
Yeah, of course. And you guys have to come on mine. And I've had you both on my show, so I want to be back. Great.
Thank you for being a patron of the Unauthorized Disclosure Podcast. We really appreciate the 200-plus people out there who make this Unauthorized Disclosure Podcast possible. For those of you who are not patrons, and to those of you who are new listeners of the Unauthorized Disclosure Podcast, and we hope there are several of you, we would like to encourage you to go to patreon.com/unauthorizeddisclosure. patreon.com/unauthorizeddisclosure. and become monthly patrons of our show today. There you will unlock access to exclusive content. We'll welcome you into our community. You'll be able to participate in episodes when we do patron-driven shows where we ask patrons what kind of questions or comments they might have for us, and we use those to develop our episodes. You'll also be able to get early access to episodes. Infrequently, we post these and make them available to people before the general public who are able to listen to our show. It's a free show. Anybody can get it. But with your support, we're able to do the Unauthorized Disclosure podcast on a more regular basis. We're able to commit to having guests like Katie Halper. We're able to go out of our way to schedule and give people platforms who deserve it. So, thank you for listening to the Unauthorized Disclosure podcast. I hope you will consider supporting the show if you are not a patron already, and go to patreon.com/unauthorizeddisclosure. We'll be back soon with another episode.